Good evening. Gosh. This is wonderful. We have a couple of visitors, and Jeff has been away for a while.
Sorry.
Very nice to see you again.
Thank you.
Yeah, we missed you. A Wednesday night group. Isn't that where we've met before?
I'm a Quaker.
Oh, you're a Quaker. So I've seen you at the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Welcome. And Beth Ann, mm-hmm. fresh from Cambodia. Mm-hmm. Well,
still from Cambodia.
You're still in Cambodia.
No, stale from.
Very happy to see you. Let's do the introductions around.
Marie.
Judy.
Jean.
Jeffrey.
Caroline.
Beth.
Samia.
Ron. Paul.
Wendy.
Karen.
Isayo.
Jeff.
Angie. Presumably last week we finished discussing the Heart Sutra, which we just finished reciting. And I felt when I thought about it later that I was giving it a little bit short shrift, and that it would be nice to tie it up a little bit more than I did. So first I'd like to open it up to questions. If you all have anything left over from the discussion that's been on your mind that we could clarify a bit, I think this is the time to do that. And maybe we've had plenty of discussion. It's hard to know how many words we need and when it's time to stop talking. But sometimes it's really important.
I don't have a question, but I do like chanting in English. I just wanted to put that out there. I think it helps me to be reminded to think about form as emptiness and emptiness as form, which I'm not reminded of in my daily life when I chant in Japanese. So for me, it's a good. It resonates throughout the rest of the week if I chant it.
Well, that's important.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a question how much we should hold on to the words and the meaning of the words and how much we just let it flow through us.
Right.
And of course, we can do both in English also.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's tempting to try to figure it out also. And once we get stuck in figuring it out, then it loses its meaning.
Mm-hmm.
It's empty meaning, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I think you're right. I've always felt so. And yet it's quite glorious to do it in the other way. And it prepares us for going to another Zen place where it will be completely familiar. The wonderful thing about our practice is wherever we go, it's the same. When I went to Austria, except it was in German, it was the same. exactly the same Oryoka, how we ate and how we chanted and all of that. So that, even going to a Heiji monastery in Japan, where I imagined that it would be much different and very intense and very strange and weird, was exactly the same. It was just wonderful. Ron?
I don't think we have to figure it out. I don't like to use the word soundtrack, but I've been chanting it for so many years. I've lost count of the years, but you know, different phrases from it are with me at different times. Or they just come up, and I found that true as I come there, and I used to chant that in the middle. Jeffrey, it's all this imagery, you know. And it's sometimes the meaning of it sort of reveals itself during situations or just during the passing of time.
Well, the interesting.
I don't have to worry about thinking of that.
Yes. The interesting thing is that it's presenting all of Buddha's teachings and then putting a big no on each one. So all the study that we have done has given us an exposure to, a deep exposure to Buddha's teachings. The Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, the Prajnaparamitas, all of those things. And at the same time, pointing out that if we hold on to it too tightly as a thought, that it's just a thought. And that there's a mind of us that is beyond thinking. And that holding and clinging on to any thought, including the words of the Heart Sutra, just turn it into one more thing. And we lose the whole sense, which is what the meaning of emptiness is. Emptiness does not mean empty. It means the wholeness of it. The whole wisdom and totality of all being, which can't be named.
I think it's a good thing to try and figure it out. Work harder trying to figure it out. Really put everything you've got into it until you wear yourself out.
Yes, that's one of the points. Yeah. And yet it's important, really important to do that. And maybe that leads to what I brought, which is a very small thing. A conversation that happened online with Judy, who is taking some of Koban's words on the Heart Sutra and editing them, in doing another really noble editing job. And she had a question about one of the things that he said and sent it to me. And what he said was, smell and warmth and taste are examples of the objective side which causes your knowing. The subjective side is maybe the path through which all elements of knowing come in and go out, like nose, body, and tongue. To know, where is it about prajna? In there are five senses and their aggregate mind. In Sanskrit, the subjective side of knowing through eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind is called prajna. And the objective side of it, color, sound, smell, taste, touch, object of mind, is called vijnana. Together, these make 12 elements. So when I hold a teacup, my eyes see form and color, and my hand is feeling something, its shape and warmth. If I put it closer to my nose, there is smell. When I touch it, there is warmth, and when I taste it, my tongue feels something. Smell and warmth and taste are examples of the objective side, which causes your knowing. The subjective side is maybe the path through which all the elements of knowing come in and go out. This is what we call prajna. And she said, is it right? Is this what we call prajna? It led me to go back to the words of the Heart Sutra and realize that although the thing that we get stuck with is form is emptiness and emptiness is form, the essence of it is really about prajna. We depend on prajna, which is another word for the formless wisdom, the wisdom that we can't name, the untalkaboutable, that when we sit becomes clear to us, that as we surrender our attachment to our thinking, our love of our words and of our own identity, and just surrender to what we don't know, that itself is form and emptiness, and emptiness is form. It's not anything very fancy, it's just how we sit. And it's how we live our everyday life that often we aren't aware. Unless, like Paul, we carry it, or Don, Ron, we carry it around and are constantly reminded, which is part of our practice. Reminded. So beyond words and within words, both. Beyond thinking and absolutely right here now thinking, both. Eyes, ears, nose. There isn't any other place to be but right where you are. That's what we get. That's what we are. And it's huge and very, very small. And is forever and is very, very limited. It's so paradoxical that we want to be able to hold on to something that will keep us understanding, but we have to let it go and just let it be. Let us be just like this, just like we are.
Intimacy of it. watching TV, like me watching a program on something completely non-essential, just entertainment, and I'll get a message directly made for me, for my practice, just right there.
Yeah.
And I just go, thank you.
Yes.
What else can I say?
Yes. Yes.
There's no space and time.
Yes.
It's always right here, right now.
Yes. Including right now.
Of course.
Are there other translations that have used a different word? Not that word's important, but than emptiness, if you're saying emptiness doesn't really capture it.
So, you know, it doesn't. It's very frustrating because it's so distant from what it really means.
Mm-hmm.
Boundlessness is sometimes used, which feels better.
Yeah.
It's closer to what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good. So being bound and boundless at the same time is very peculiar, kind of paradoxical way to be. It's really weird if you think about it, but that's what it is. But as soon as we say so, then it turns into one more thing. So you can't even say so. If you follow it as a thought, it becomes one more cheap thought. So best way is just to be where we are and how we are. And allow it. That was Koban's way of translating the last of the Bodhisattva vows. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to allow it. It points to our resistance. There's in us a way that we want to hold on to this nice, apparently very solid, fixed life of us, even though if we examine it carefully, we see how it flows, how it has never been the same, moment by moment. And certainly we have never been the same, moment by moment. Looking back, we can see so many different versions of us. And we're not done yet. So, allowing it, allowing what comes next, and letting it be, because we don't know. And that's part of the giving up of the thinking of not knowing, just allowing not knowing to happen. It makes our sitting very much easier. We sit without a plan or an agenda. We're already there. We're already here. So as I said last week, we're never done with the Heart Sutra. This is about the fourth time we've done this in the last 15 years or so. And we'll do it again, I'm sure. but it's time to think about what to do next. And I'm hoping that we can choose something tonight. I hope you all have been thinking about that somewhat. And I have two. I brought you some books last week that I have suggestions, and I know you all have books on your mind too. Don?
There's another one, sometimes called the Tanzeo, which I don't know if we have a version of it. Let me, or whatever we should call it. It came down from the San Francisco Zen Center back in the day.
You mean the short chant that's done? Kanze on, yo butsu uin, yo butsu uin. Bu po po.
How long is that? That's
just it's very, very short.
Yeah, there's another one that I'm thinking of.
There's one in the Lotus Sutra.
That, it might be that one.
Yes. It's a...
The reason I know of it, because I did it when I set another group affiliated with Shasta Abbey. And we were chatting.
Uh-huh.
I don't read much about translation.
I had a copy of it.
And it's the chapter in the Lotus Sutra, isn't it? I'm pretty sure it is. Yeah, it's beautiful. You call on Kuan Yin or Avalokiteshvara or the Bodhisattva of Compassion, that one will take the form of anything necessary in order to help and save. Somebody's drowning. It will know how to swim and take you out of the water. It will, if you're a butcher and you need something, it will become a butcher and hook up with you. It will just take any form at all. It's that kind of extremity that points to actually a truth of how things are, of calling for help is actually the way to get help. And naming it compassion is a very wonderful way of doing that. In Japan, there are wonderful statues of Avalokiteshvara with many arms and hands holding instruments of every kind, knives and pitchforks and scalpels and everything that you would need to help somebody. So that one can just leap to the fore at any moment. And then there's the Tibetan Tara, who is a 16-year-old girl, who is sitting with one foot out like this, so that if she hears something, she can jump right up and go and help. Mm-hmm. I know a Vietnamese woman who was a boat person, and when they were in a great storm, prayed to Avalokiteshvara. And then they got to America, she and her whole family, and were very badly treated. They were brought by a church in Palo Alto who took very good care of them, but set them out to take care of themselves, and they were scammed right and left and didn't understand enough to be able to deal with things and were very discouraged. And the neighbor asked the gal who was telling me this story if she wanted the statue. And it was a statue that she had inherited from somebody, and it was Avalokiteshvara. It was the one of compassion. And it was like a miracle to her to see it after everything. And she took it to her home and it changed everything. I think it empowered her to be able to be with everything in a way that she couldn't all by herself. We're not alone. Feels like it. Often. But we're not. Suggestions? Carolyn.
Well, I was thinking after our discussion last week of a book by Uchiyama came up that you brought in. I don't know that book, but I was thinking of one that we did many, many years ago, like 2000. The Uchiyama's not so enough.
Sounds like a lot.
50 years ago. At the turn of the millennium, it's the Uchiyama's commentary on Dogen Zendo, the Wholehearted Way.
Oh yes, mm-hmm. Yes. That was a talk that he gave to lay people, and. So it's a little different from the rest of, and it's not even in Shogo Genso in the collection of Dogen's talks. It's sort of an all by itself. It includes a mention of women, which is rare, that women too are practicing in the same way and with the same results as men. It's very helpful. It has a lot of questions and answers in it. So that's very helpful. It brings up things that you might bring up in your own mind. And then he has answers. And Uchiyama Roshi was one of Kogen's teachers. So there's a connection there, and he writes in a very, very clear and beautiful way. So there's a little connection there, family connection, you could say. So that's a very good suggestion. Karen?
I would like to second that. Because I like the title.
Third.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we haven't studied Dogen for a while, so I think very timely.
We did the Bendo a couple of years ago.
We did do.
A year ago. Maybe.
Was it a
year? Yeah, I do audio, so.
You do the audio, she knows.
The Wholehearted Way.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've done it.
Quite recently.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the talks are online.
Yeah. But we haven't done the other one.
Opening the hand of thought. Yeah. And there's also the one about cooking. That's a wonderful one. We haven't done that for a long time.
Who's the author?
Dogen.
Oh, Dogen.
Well, Uchiyama Roshi also.
Has a commentary on Dogen?
It's a commentary on, I'm trying to think what it's called.
Instructions.
Tenzo Yoku,
yeah. Which is instructions to the cook. Mm-hmm. And it's very wonderful. he talks about his history of going to China, for one thing, and his experience, and meeting cooks, and the kind of mind that they brought. The cook's mind is the most important part of a monastery. If the cook is a mess, everything else is a mess also. So the cook is considered to be more important than the abbot. And it's given great, great honor and help. But it's a very, very particular kind of practice of being very, very mindful and very knowing of exactly how much rice and who you're cooking for and what kind of warmth and kindness you put into the food as you cook. So as far as instructions for everyday life, it's a beautiful work. Very helpful. How to hang up the pots. How to wash the rice.
Bernie Glassman has a, I don't think it's a commentary on that, but he has a book where he talks about it. I think he was inspired by that instructions to cook. Oh. Are there a lot of commentaries on it, though?
Not that I know of. There's just the one, I think. Yeah. Or just the thing itself. I mean, we could read the thing itself and talk about it without having to read a whole book. And there's more Dogen, of course. Anybody else? What shall we do?
It sounded like there were three votes for Venpo, right? All of our viewers.
Yeah. What about the others? We'll have to do this the Quaker way.
There's a book on Sunyata by a Theravada monk that I've been slowly making my way through, but for the life of me, I can't remember the title or the monk that wrote the book right now. So I can't recommend it because I can't remember anything.
Okay. Well, maybe another time.
Some Dogen. I would vote for some Dogen.
Okay.
Angie, there's something that you had mentioned, and I can't remember what it was, that you sounded excited about that was new. Last week you said something about that? No? It's none of what we mentioned today.
I'm trying to think what I brought.
Was it a book that she brought in?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm happy if you would decide.
I'd be happy with anything,
really.
That's why I say that.
Seconding is
third.
but it's all wonderful. So Dogen, I hear kind of a reverberation about Dogen.
Yes. Yes. Well, how many? So there are two of them. There's Bendoa, And there's the cook one, the instructions to the cook. And we could do one after the other, as far as that's concerned, if you'd like to do that. Or choose one to begin with.
I didn't realize that while I was away that you had done this so recently, so I was thinking, so if it's very recent for everyone, then maybe you don't want to go.
Well, let's see what people think. Who votes for Bendoa? One?
Do we have to vote one? How many votes do we have?
Are we picking one and two, or A and B?
What's number two?
Instructions to the cook.
Oh, then I go with one.
Bendoa, 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 Bendoa.
I just want to be popular.
Okay. Great. So there is a book by Uchiyama Roshi, and there is just the Bendoa. So I can make a copy. Well, if you get the book, I'll copy it. It's just a couple of pages. And so you'll each have a copy of it, of the Dogen's work itself. And then if you're interested in the book, you can get the book. Okay? Ah, good. Thank you very much. Well done. Well, it's 8 o'clock. And I think Wendy has an announcement.
Yes, we have some additions to our calendar. I guess it's this Sunday, the 10th, Vanya Palmers will be at Jikoji, who is also a student of Koban and transmitted Angie. And next Tuesday, Carolyn will be our teacher. And then the following Saturday on the 16th is our sit up at Connie Batten's. And then the 19th, 2 weeks, in 2 weeks, we're going to have a business meeting after our evening service, and usually last about an hour, so 8:15 to 9:15, and so let's see. I think the volunteers for Saturday at the Connie's was Judy, Carolyn, and Samia. Guys are still on. Okay. I'll let you know what we need to do. That's all the announcements I have.
Well, I highly recommend going to Connie's. It's up in the mountain and it's in a meadow and it's very, very beautiful. It's a great way to spend a day. Anything else?
Do we need to let anybody know we're going to Connie's or just show up?
Just show up. And if you can't come for the whole day, you can come for part of it. There'll be lunch, and you can bring something to add to the food. People do, but Connie makes a big soup usually, and so there's lots to eat for lunch. Okay. Well, let's have a 1 minute sit.